I think that where they're going to really hit a roadblock is unless Travis Kelce has a true depth and appreciation for darkness, the arts maybe? That we don't know about. And yeah, and maybe even honestly his own inner demons and darkness. I just personally think that there will be an entire part of Taylor Swift, potentially the most important part of her, that he will have very little access to and ability to relate to.
Lauren, he does have an appreciation for the arts. He just signed to do 22 episodes of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader for Amazon. That's a hit television show.
Well, well, well. Oh, the three faces I'm staring at, sorry, the two faces, I'm including my own. These are, Chandler, what would I call us? Tortured listeners? Tortured poets?
Souls? Fans?
Oh, Taylor Swift devotees, we are joined today. We are so lucky because this is truly such a major deal. The one and only Joe Peacock has joined the show to break down all of the tortured poets department.
Thank you for having me. I need to talk to someone this Sunday morning, and I'm so grateful to be sitting across from the two of you.
Joe, our listeners are about to be delighted with your talents, but I will say you're one of the only people, usually if we have a friend come on the show, people are like, quit it with the high school friends. No one cares what they have to say. But when Joe came on the pod, they're like, can we get Joe to replace Lauren? He is so funny. He is so good. So anyway, I'm so excited that you're here.
I don't have any connection to that kind of like a faction of your fandom. So that's all kind of like ingrown themselves. Yeah, it's natural.
So where do we even begin with this great seminal tome of work by one Taylor Swift, the Tortured Poets Department? Chandler?
I want to begin with my own journey here because I will say it was a fraught journey. The universe, God, whoever had a plan for me because my journey actually began, not at midnight on the night of the album release. My journey began at 3 a.m. that night when I began to have food poisoning. And I had gone to bed after going to the Taylor Swift bar, going to Taze, and I was ready to wake up and really, bask in the album when at 3 a.m. I was woken by a rumbling and a tumbling, and I proceeded to be sick for like the first 8 hours of the day. So I didn't even get to listen to this album, and I was getting, an onslaught of text messages from my multiple Taylor Swift group texts, and I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't even listen to the album. I was so sick, and I just don't know why God sent this journey, for me, why that was my fate with it. But I just had to get that off my chest.
Honestly, I feel like food poisoning would have been better than my first 8 hours with this album. And Joe was here for all of it.
I was nervous to come to this pod. I'm curious about your journey, Lauren, because I know where you were. And I feel like I've come to this podcast with my Bible in hand, the lyric book, just ready to defend my faith. But yeah.
Ready to spread the good word. Well, here's the thing. I came to this album hearing the leaks. Okay. So I did indulge in the leaked version of the album. And because this is really some unique sonic tapestries from Taylor, we got some music that I think that on further reflection and closer inspection, she is self-aware about in completing certain projects. But at first blush and first glance, they hit like AI to me, to be totally honest. And so anyway, yeah, I really wrestled with this music at the beginning. And I think that a lot of people are having and did have that reaction because this is not 1989 2.0. It's not a bunch of dance bangers. This is a sonic project by a true genius.
You feel that way about all 31 of the tracks?
No. But I feel like there's enough on both of these albums, but especially the first volume, that when I was listening to it leaked, I was like, oh, there's no way they ate 7 bars of chocolate. Now Charlie Puth is the best artist ever. Like, this is a joke. Like, this is an AI version of these tracks. An AI company is going to come out tomorrow and be like, we actually were the ones that created the leak. This is the big marketing thing for our album. And it's going to be like Osama bin Laden claiming, 9/11. And anyway, that was my hope and prayer. And I texted my other friend who was listening to this, Marin, and we were just on bended knee that we'd be getting different music at midnight. And so when I hit push play on Fortnite at 12:01, yeah, it was dark. But I don't want you to turn off this episode because truly I come here today with a contrite heart and spirit. Okay. a mighty change of heart, if you will, because I have sat with this music and I do have a very different opinion than I did during those panicked first 24 hours.
A mighty change of heart has brought me here today.
I'm relieved to hear that. And no, I relate to what you're saying, Lauren. This kind of reminds me when she dropped Folklore. And I remember even listening to Cardigan and thinking, the song is trash. And now I can't picture my life without it. But like the songs and songscapes were so much more subtler and quieter than Reputation in 1989 that I dismissed them at first. But this album has grown on me too. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that there's enough here for an album. I do have some beef with it though. And that is, you know, she gave us 31 tracks. I think there are 14 standout tracks. 14 standout tracks. That's a great hit rate for any album. Most albums do not have that many. The problem is if you do the math, that means there's 17 skips. So that means she released an album with 17 skips. And to me, it's like, I already have a job. It shouldn't be my job to edit this album. but I don't know. Like, I am thrilled with my version of the album I have now. Like, I'm really enjoying the tracks that I like, but. Yeah.
That is such a good point, because really, if you can just pull out your picks and, you know, delete your skips, I think everyone can arrive at a delicious Taylor Swift album.
I completely agree. I think there are Taylor Swift albums that cut you open a million different ways. All right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every song is another high, high or another low, low. And I also compare this to like a Folklore, Evermore, even honestly, where it's like we got some like honestly Evermore more for me. Don't kill me, you know, for making that comparison. But you know, her power and on some of the tracks in it delivers and delivers. And then there's a lot of songs that are just in the middle. And for me, this is just another version of that. But instead, it's, you know, 31 tracks, and there's just a lot of songs that fall more in the middle. They're not bad. I don't think she writes any bad songs. They're just, they just don't slap as much. And so, yeah, like with Evermore, I mean, I think there's like, for me, there are 5 hits on that and there's 17 songs.
Yeah.
But I don't consider it to be a bad album. It just, it maybe isn't enough, you know, Midnights to me.
I have 2 things to say to that. First, it's that I think that with this album, there were songs that almost seemed laughable upon first listen. And Evermore doesn't have that for me. Evermore doesn't have songs like I Know You Love
Nobody,
It.
Nobody, No Crime.
Okay,
well, I'm sorry. I don't think I've ever listened to that song the entire way through.
Evermore doesn't have Down Bad at the Gym, Fuck It If I Can't Have Him.
No, I don't have.
That is a good song, Lauren. Okay,
I knew this was going to be a spicy episode, and we're already getting into it. We're at 7 minutes in. Lauren, I know that you think certain songs are laughable here, but I just completely disagree.
No.
And I think there are songs that are maybe more boring, but I wouldn't say any of them are laughable.
I think there are laughable songs on here.
Not saying that they're laughable songs. I'm saying that at first blush, okay? If you're not willing to sit at the feet of Taylor and take these as certain projects, right, where she's saying, this romance sent me to a place of teenage angst. And so I want to express teenage angst. And that's the project of this song. If you don't come at it through that lens and you think this is supposed to be Taylor Swift writing a great love song, then you're like, oh, Taylor Swift, angsty teenager, embarrassing. These lyrics are so, you know, so simple, so silly, you know, without any sort of complexity, so anti-literary for the tortured poets department. And so I think that, you know, it gives a lot of fuel to the haters, and we are charged with her defense, as has her disciples, which we are and continue to be.
Now I'm down bad, crying at the gym. Everything comes out, teenage petulance. Fuck it if I can't have him.
I like where you're going with that, Lauren, as far as like coming to it with what our expectations were. I think we all expected this album for us to find out why Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively and everyone unfollowed Joe Alwyn.
Yes.
And it was to like really like look into the dissolution of her relationship with Joe Alwyn, whereas at least especially the first half, it's heavily about Maddie Healy, which is just a completely different kind of relationship.
Yes.
And so I think when we're listening to these tracks at first, we're like, wait, oh, these are, like you say, maybe a little more like sophomoric or teenager angst, but no less important. Like they live in me now, and I can appreciate them for what they are now.
Exactly.
I thought we were going to be getting an album full of peace, you know, plural. Like that's what I thought. Like the song Peace, that's very complex. that's like hard to listen to at times. It's beautiful. I thought we were going to be getting an album full of songs like of that level complexity here. Mm-hmm. All about the 6-year long relationship she had mm-hmm. with Joe. I thought it would take me 6 years to process this album because mm-hmm. it was going to be so intense and like explain so much about their relationship that still sort of baffles me in certain ways. And that's not what we got. So yeah, I do think there's some expectation adjustment that had to happen here.
Can I also say that I think that honest Swifties will agree that we came to this album hoping for that moment where the first words of the track start, the first notes, and it's just like your body is on fire. The song is so good and captivates you from beginning to end. This is not every Taylor song, but on her album, I would say 2 to 3 at least for me on all of her albums have this thing like Anti-Hero, like You're on Your Own Kid, like Maroon, where they really just hold you hostage completely. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it. I don't think we have any songs like that on this album.
I respect your opinion, and I am so grateful that I have a song that does that for me on this album. Could I go off?
Please.
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 Okay. The title track on this album, The Tortured Poets Department, does that for me.
Really?
From the very beginning, mm-hmm. sounds like a John Hughes movie. It's like so hopeful. But the song, I know it started getting a lot of flack when the lyrics leaked, and because she has the infamous you know, you ate 7 bars of chocolate and we smoked and we declared Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist. But I love that lyric.
I love it.
You smoked then ate 7 bars of chocolate. We declared Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist.
And I love this song. Yeah, this song to me is about how all of like You've Got Mail, when you fall in love, it's this collection of sweet nothings that somehow all add up to something. But sometimes all the little nothings don't add up to anything. Mm. And I think that's her like finding this out in those lyrics. But the song is also to me about how sometimes all those nothings can still haunt you.
Yes.
And remind you of everything you almost never had. Mm-hmm. At least that's what it does for me.
Oh, Joe, I completely agree. I love the title track here. I think the title track, I was not expecting it to cut me so deeply, and it did. In fact, I remember I listened to the title track, and then I listened to My Boy Only Breaks His Favorite Toys, and I preferred the title track to that, and I thought it was going to be the opposite. And I mean, the lyric of who's going to know me. I love the title track so much. And Lauren, I'm sorry that your elevator, your emotional elevator isn't going to the top with some of these songs. Cause I will say that, like, I will say, But Daddy, I Love Him also is a full electrifying banger.
Yes, I agree. But Daddy, I Love Him and Love of My Life, I would say they really almost get there for me. They almost get there for sure. But going back to the title track and the matter at hand, I think that the problem is that I just come at this wanting greater poetry from the Tortured Poets Department. And when I hear lines like, at dinner, you take my ring, so hard to read. At dinner, you take my ring off my middle finger and put it on the one people put wedding rings on. It's so clunky. It's so awkward. It's not good writing.
At dinner, you take my ring off my middle finger and put it on the one people put wedding rings on. And that's the closest
And I'm sorry, but I wanted better writing.
Totally
disagree. In the song's defense, I think that is, you're valid, that is the worst lyric of the song. I was reading the New York Times review of this album, and she said that she started counting the number of times Taylor mentions like wedding rings and fingers, and she ran out of fingers.
No, it's, I mean, but then it's followed up with something even worse, and that's the closest I've come to my heart exploding. I mean, what is it's giving Rupi Kapoor or whatever that, you know, Instagram poet is
Rupi
named.
Carr.
Rupi Kaur. It's just... It's barfable.
I don't fault Taylor for her glitter gel pen, like kind of adolescent lyrics, because at the same time, she also like, you know, ham fists, like extremely vocabulary laden songs with the album. Like I just, she does both at times, and she does, I love Paper Rings, you know, and I love her more literary songs, and it just is what it is. I don't fault her, I guess, for having both.
I think the production on the title track, though, too, just like elevates everything.
Yes,
too.
Yes.
It takes you somewhere else. I keep going back to it like every other song.
Yeah, I agree.
I need to talk to you about a stunning experience I had. I got a massage yesterday and I took an early bird gummy an hour before my massage. 30 minutes into my massage, I'm starting to nod off. I never nap. I never fall asleep during massages. I was so relaxed and I was getting concerned. I'm like, why am I falling asleep? And then I remembered it was the early bird.
Like, oh, yeah.
I can't even describe to you guys how good an early bird gummy plus massage is. It already makes you feel so like warm and melty and gooey. And then to be getting a massage, it's a peak experience.
No, that sounds peak. I need to try that immediately. I cannot say enough good things about early bird. It is something I never want to run out of. Mm-hmm. I love knowing that if I need to get a good night's sleep, I've got it. And if I just want to kind of take the edge off while I watch a show or, you know, just want to scroll on Reels, it's there for me.
You guys, the great thing about Early Bird gummies is that they are a recreational hemp product and contain 2.5 milligrams of natural THC and 12.5 milligrams of CBD in each gummy.
So everyone, go to earlybirdcbd.com and use the code POPAPOLOGIST20 for 20% off.
earlybirdcbd.com, POPAPOLOGIST20 for 20% off.
Lauren, I got this text from my friend last night and she said, yo, what's the protein powder you guys peddle on your pod? Is it actually good?
Okay, what did you say?
I then inundated her with a bunch of messages explaining how good it was, really trying to show her that it's not something we simply peddle. It's actually something we truly believe in. So
it's not something we peddle. It's like a passion.
Let's just say that there were two gray text messages followed up by 8 blue text messages.
Read them all verbatim.
I said, it's the only one I drink. ... I've literally been drinking it since college. Clean, simple eats. The vanilla and the chocolate, it's called brownie batter chocolate, are musts. They have a lot of other flavors too if you're more adventurous. They also have travel packs if you want to try something out before buying a full bag. Then I sent her the links, not even affiliate links. I just was like, no, if you're even considering buying a protein powder, I've got it for you. I've got it squared away. I've got it locked in. Do not look anywhere else.
It is so, so good. This is what we're saying within the privacy of our text message threads and yes, publicly on this podcast. Guys, go to cleansimpleeats.com, use code POPAPOLOGIST for 10% off your order. cleansimpleeats.com, code POPAPOLOGIST. Can I just bring to your attention a few more lyrics, though? Not because I think that they demonstrate the sophomoric level of the song at all. I think because they demonstrate why Maddie Healy hooked her so hard. Can we get into that at all?
Yeah, let's stop mincing the words of our dear Taylor Allison Swift. And can we get into, you know, the greater matter at hand?
Listen, I'm trying to share my opinions, okay, in the manner of Tamara Judge, but also say that I get what you guys are saying. I get this song is fun. It is fun.
It is.
It's fun to listen to, and I do enjoy it. Okay. On second, third, eighth listen, it does get better for me. Okay. This lyric. Sometimes I wonder if you're going to screw this up with me, but you told Lucy you'd kill yourself if I ever leave. And I said to Jack, and I had said that to Jack about you, so I felt seen.
Sometimes I wonder if you're going to screw this up with me, but you told Lucy you'd kill yourself if I ever leave. And I had said that to Jack about you, so I felt seen.
I feel like Maddie Healy gave her this desperation of I love you, this love bombing, this obsession, this like we are two dark poets in turmoil. Only the two of us will understand each other. Only the two of us will know how to hold each other. And I think that, yes, this relationship might have only been 3 to 6 months, but I feel like when a man does that to you, it can hurt so much worse than a 5-year relationship that mm-hmm. never had the same depth to it. And that's where I come in Taylor's defense here and say it makes sense that she's in such turmoil over this, right? Like, and he's threatening suicide.
Completely. I also want to add to that. I think, you know, there was like a long history even before they were confirmed to be dating, where they were maybe in each other's lives, where maybe she had a crush on him from afar. And I think that the idea of him was also so strong in her mind. So then when they finally got together and he is love bombing her and he is turning out to be everything she hoped he would be to her, you know, mind, body, and soul, whatever. Like, I just think that's going to cut you even deeper than, you know, your C-list actor who was really sweet to you when you were down and out.
I agree. It's that long tail of expectation beforehand that just like made mm-hmm. it such a great height to fall from. Yeah. And I'm sorry. Like, I saw the GQ video of him talking about his typewriter. Like, the way I would let him like swoop me up for a summer.
Oh, I would still date him. After this album, I would still date him.
Yeah. Same.
I think finding about to be married, but would still date him.
everyone listening, finding Maddie Healy fuckable is an essential project when, you know, enjoying this album is at hand. And so I highly recommend watching that video. I agree. And getting into his music, because I think Taylor had this unique perspective where he was also like a pop, like she was a fangirl for him, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just want to also say I saw the 1975 when I was in high school. I took a picture with Maddie Healy cheek to cheek. I have also had a long history with this man. And so this album also felt like closure for me, not even closure, but it felt like, you know, ripping up the threads of my youth and my obsession with him. So anyway, I fully get it. I fully get it.
Well, I watched him kiss two male security guards last summer.
At his concert?
Do you remember that? Yeah, he would just like kiss people. And sometimes it was like a 50-year-old security guard. Sometimes it was like a 19-year-old security guard, both men. Yeah.
Well, doesn't that explain the it was chaos, it was revelry? Like, I think for Taylor, dating someone as uninhibited as Maddie Healy has got to be just so fucking fun, right?
Yes. Yes.
And after being with Joe,
right?
It was chaos, he was revelry. Bedroom eyes like a remedy. Soon enough, the elders had convened down at the city hall.
Also, clearly he, like, I mean, are we going to get in? Should we get into, I was wondering if we should go chronologically through the songs or should we just go straight to But Daddy, I Love Him?
Yeah.
What do you guys want to do?
There's so much here. Like, I'm down to popcorn style it.
Okay, let's popcorn style, because I do think that track really, it really sums up the not even the desperate, but just the absolutely unbridled passion and love that Taylor felt, the teenage love sickness, the floor it through the fences, just it's a dreamscape. I love this song.
Not to belabor my earlier point, but just like also when the boy that you have had a crush on forever finally likes you back enough to like date you publicly or to like to fully like shine his light on you, like you're just going to be like, fuck everything else. I'm literally a tunnel vision for you, like floor it through the fences.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And this through the fences, this song gives like Speak Now vibes in such a strong way, which is so fun.
Time to floor it through the fences.
But like, I feel like the title could be replaced, But Tree, I Love Him. She talks about how the elders assembled, you know, like, I don't think it was really Scott that was stopping her. No. It was like, Tree's like, this is making my job so much harder.
Literally. I mean, I think I saw one of the reviewer comment on Reddit that was like, you know, a conversation with Tree was had before this song was put out on the album, where it was like, look, I know this is going to be a thing.
Well, and this is, to be honest, this song was so good when I was listening to it at first, but I was like, really? Taylor is red-pilled? Like, for real? She's just gonna like, a lot of her fans fit the bill of Hannah's and Sarah's. And by the way, I feel terrible for anyone named Hannah and Sarah right now listening to this album, because that would put me in a dark place.
Sure.
But I just felt like, really, Taylor is going to ostracize or throw shade on a big portion of her fandom. I was shocked. Another reason why I thought it was AI at first.
Sarah's and Hannah's in the Sunday best, clutching their pearls, sighing, what a mess. I just learned these people try and save you because they hate you.
No, but I love that about it. I love that this was a literal fuck you to a serious portion of her fans and that we all love this song. Like, only she could put a song on her album that's literally, screw you, I don't care what you think, and we would all, like, eat it up and love it.
Well, I don't
She's
think everyone's eating
before.
It up and loving it, by the way.
Oh,
I
really?
Think that some
people are hating it?
I think that people who are really anti-Maddie, the Sarahs and Hannahs she's talking about, are absolutely, like, I'm extremely put off.
Honestly, I'm happy to see them go.
I am too.
Oh,
bye bye.
Did she actually mention like Sarahs and Hannahs by name in the song?
Yeah, she says all the Sarahs and Hannahs clutching their pearls. Like, she fully drops that.
I love when she says sanctimoniously performing soliloquies I'll never see, which I just think are like Twitter rants by fans.
Yes.
Yeah.
So savage.
Oh, it's such a burn. And I think that it's so refreshing to hear this from Taylor, because I do think that Taylor. It's so easy to think that she's always trying to be such a good girl, and she's always like just trying to make people happy. She's the perpetual people pleaser, right? Mm-hmm, and there's just something so gorgeous about her saying, literally, fuck off to all of you. Guess right. what? I'll tell you one thing about my good name. It's mine alone. It's disgrace. I mean, that's full body chills.
FBC.
I'll tell you something right now. I'd rather burn my whole life down than listen to one more second of all this bitching and moaning. I'll tell you something about my good name. It's mine alone to disgrace. I don't cater to all these vipers dressed in empire's clothing. God save the most judgmental creeps who say they want what's best for me. Sanctimoniously performing soliloquies I'll never see. Thinking it can change the beat of my heart when he touches me.
I think, like, with a song like Antihero, where she's very good at playing, like, people don't like me, I'm the victim. You know, like, this just felt like such an empowering, like, Like, there was no part of her that felt victimized by this. It was just like, screw all of you. I don't care. I'm going to continue living my life exactly the way I want to live it. And it, yeah, it felt so refreshing. It was like jumping into like a pool in the middle of a summer day. Like, I loved seeing this like shade of her, like so like blatant and fragrant, flagrant,
yes. flagrant, yes.
Yeah, it's,
flagrant.
It's delicious. I do prefer this song to Who's Afraid of Little Old Me?
Yeah.
I feel like this song is that version of that, but like subtle and like not over the top. Like, I only need one of them and this is it.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Well, it's interesting. I feel like I felt like Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? Well, is that written? I thought it was written towards like the Kardashians. Is it written towards fans
Who
as well?
Who knows? I don't know. It's enemies.
I think our friend Caitlin posited that it might be written towards Olivia Rodrigo or someone did.
It's such a mess song for me. I mean, I rated this one like a 3.
Well, and I think that Taylor on this album, she gets into certain projects, right? Or she decides, I want to write a song, or she feels compelled to write a song about things that are deeply unrelatable, like being so feared by everyone around you that you will, you know, go after them with a lawsuit, and everyone is just, you know, you're too big of a presence for people to want to hang out with you. I think also that happens on Clara Bow. I don't know how much a lot of us can relate to, like, not being the iconic pop star of the moment perpetually, and that's like such a big fear of hers.
Yeah,
it seems to me like sometimes some of these songs, honestly, they don't expand to a place where they're going to receive larger resonance because they go to bigger themes. They stay really specific and about Taylor. And I think that some of them, they won't be listened to and become like gospel for people the way other songs by other artists, you know, even about similar things will. And they do achieve that larger resonance.
I feel that it won't like be the soundtrack to some moments of my life because, like you say, I don't relate. But I do love getting the little sound bites into her head because they're like so self-referential. She's like in the last great American Dynasty when she mentions like, and the house that I bought, it's just like, seeing her flex like that is kind of fun. I think
I will say I have a hard time with Taylor Swift like writing about history. I don't know if I'm just like not smart enough, but I just like
internalized misogyny for sure.
No, it's not about like she doesn't have any right to write about history. It's just that I just don't care about history, I think, enough to like care about like who the real Clara Bow was and why her life, you know, is a metaphor for Olivia Rodrigo and Sabrina Carpenter, or even like the last great American Dynasty, where I'm just like, oh, I don't really care about this woman from like the 1800s. And I think that's where like where she tries to be like this martyr from the past, like Joan of Arc, where she loses me, where I'm just like, skip, let's go back to like so high school. And I want to, you know, getting like felt up in the basement.
So high school is just like a throwback. I know they reference American Pie, but like, I love it so much.
I love it so much. And I know Lauren and I are going to fully disagree about this because she spoiled it for me. Like before I'd even listened to it, she texted me and I'm going to read what she said. I'm going to pull up my receipts because she tried to literally shit on this song before I'd even listened to it. Okay.
You haven't come around to it, Lauren?
Well, I'll let Chandler, you know,
so let me just, I'm just gonna,
and, you know,
she says,
put out her case.
She goes, it's hard for me to talk about this album. I think it is so bad. And then she goes, so high school legitimately sounds like it was written by Ashley Simpson. So high school legitimately sounds like it was written by Ashley Simpson.
Ashley Simpson is great.
She's great.
Yeah, she's not Taylor fucking Swift. Oh my God, guys. Sorry.
No. So, okay, let's get into So High School if we can.
let's get into So High School, because I think So High School is another song where you have to approach it with the project in mind. Okay. She's writing a song that's a 2000s, 90s nostalgic high school song. She's channeling Michelle Branch. She's channeling Avril Lavigne. It is bringing all the millennials back to the locker room and back to the lunch yard or whatever they call it.
Are you calling it locker room talk? Are you calling
No,
So High School
I'm
locker
not.
Room talk?
I'm not. I think that I appreciate it through that lens. For sure. But I think at the beginning when I'm listening to the album, sure. and I think it could potentially be fucking made by AI. I'm just like, this is a joke. This is a joke someone created to be like, see, these are Taylor Swift songs. You know, she's getting felt up while someone's playing video games. It just...
Oh, I missed that lyric. Wow.
Oh, she doesn't say getting felt up. We're extrapolating there. That would be shocking.
I mean, here are some reactions. So someone writes, this song is atrocious. Goddamn. From the shallow ass writing to her breathy, pitchy vocals, easily my least favorite track. A lot of people were not fans of this song upon first blush. I'm not alone.
I don't think you're alone.
You know what I have to say to that?
What?
Easily my second favorite track.
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
I mean, she rhymes Grand Theft Auto with Aristotle. You know how to ball. I know Aristotle. This song just like, here's what I love this song. As a Chiefs Kingdom fan and member, this song encapsulates Travis Kelce to
yes.
a T.
Yeah.
It captures like how happy and free he is and really how it must feel to ride with the top down, maybe top off with him in a car.
Top down, top off.
Okay.
Getting pulled into the back seat. I mean, it is fun, but I will say that there are cringy moments. Like when she says, you know how to ball, I know Aristotle. Even that
I
is
love
just
it.
Like kind of well, high school and embarrassing.
Let me say.
No one who actually knows Aristotle says, I know Aristotle.
I think that
but
line
that's the
is
point
a little,
of the song.
That line is a little pick me, but I let it slide. That line is probably my least favorite line in the song. Like I prefer the Grand Theft Auto line to that song. And I think it's just because it's like, I don't know, something about knowing Aristotle just feels like a very annoying thing to say. Like, I don't want to
yes.
know any person who claims to know Aristotle. And
exactly.
Lauren was a philosophy major.
So yeah. And I would never say that. I mean, anyway,
I mean, no. And let me
I want to be taken back yeah. to a high school love, though. And this song does that for
yes.
me by introducing me to a girl who's obsessed with the fact that she knows Aristotle
right.
and that she's getting felt up by a football player.
I completely agree. I also just think it's so fun and it's just happy. And I saw a comment that was like, is this a anxiety free love song? For like the first mm-hmm. time ever. And that's what it is. Like, it feels so different for her. It has like this 90s energy to it. Like it should be playing, you know, in the background of Never Been Kissed or whatever. And I think coming off the heels of all these really dark songs about men who just like wrecked her, like upside down, you know, like over and over again, it just feels mm-hmm. like a summer day with your crush. Like, and
yeah.
I fucking love that. And that's why it's on repeat. And that's why I was listening to it while I was riding a bike through Central Park yesterday. It just makes me feel alive. And it might be childish and you might hate it, but I'm sorry you don't get to experience it like that.
I know why you like this song. I mean, thank you. You painted a picture for us. I felt like I was there with you on that bike ride. And that is a gorgeous moment. It is a very sweet, beautiful love song in that way. But I will say, I think the real reason that you like the song is because of the line, tell me about the first time you saw me. I feel like that's
oh,
something
yeah.
you asked Ben. Like, daily.
I mean, that's in the Rolodex of just like, I need some attention right now.
Can
like,
you tell me about the first time you saw me on Monday at 6 a.m.? He's just got up for work. Like, that is like so
night.
Chandler.
Last night, I swear to God, we're waiting for takeout burritos before we go to a movie. And we're just like standing there. It's been like 10 minutes. We're waiting a little too long for my liking. And, you know, we both turn to each other to speak. And what I say is, when do you think we really fell in love? And what he said, how much longer do you think we're going to be waiting for this?
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, so that's very real. That's a real thing that happens. And yeah, I get it. I get it. She is me. I am her. I love her.
It's the long suffering of Job for Ben. And for me, like I said in our group thread today, to get biblical again, I truly feel like for a lot of Swifties and for me, understanding this album, sitting with this album is like a Christian theologian wrestling with the God of the Old Testament. It's like, Why are certain things here? Why were certain things done? Why the plague? Why so high school? Why down bad? And honestly, yes, we are painting a picture. We're figuring it out, right? We're figuring out God's purpose. We're figuring out the bigger plan. Okay,
so true.
But you can't blame certain Swifties for being at first very put off by, you know, women stoned or the alchemist, okay? Or the alchemy. Jesus Christ.
I will say, I don't think it was God's purpose for So High School to be on this album. It does not belong on this album tonally in any way. It should be a standalone single or the lead single of her next album.
It should be in a private text thread with her, Travis, and a few friends, and it should be an inside joke song.
I'm so happy the song exists and that I can listen to it. I will say, to your point, somebody wrote this on Reddit, and I'm grappling with this comment, but somebody said that Travis is like her least interesting muse. And I do think that might be true. Joe, I can see those eyes.
Have you seen his body?
No,
it's the most interesting body of anyone she's ever dated.
I don't. Maybe this is just the difference between a straight woman and a gay man. But to me, not to go there, not to bring this into it. But
straight women for Travis Kelce?
No, I'm just saying, like, he's super hot. It's just like that doesn't do it enough for me. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I just think he's like compared
I
to some of her other
Chandler.
What?
I think I know what you're getting at, which is
please,
that he just, I don't think, here's the thing. I think that where they're going to really hit a roadblock is unless Travis Kelce has a true depth and appreciation for
darkness,
the arts
maybe?
That we don't know about. And yeah, and maybe even honestly his own inner demons and darkness. I just personally think that there will be an entire part of Taylor Swift, potentially the most important part of her, that he will have very little access to and ability to relate to.
Lauren, he does have an appreciation for the arts. He just signed to do 22 episodes of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader for Amazon. That's a hit television show. My God, he's been interested in getting into producing for a long time. And I have to say, for ages, married women have gone to go to their book clubs. And guess who doesn't come with them? Their husbands. It's okay to have separate interests.
It's 100%.
I don't see Kagan on this line.
No. I mean, I'm actually talking from personal experience. I mean, Kagan says to me that he doesn't listen to lyrics and songs. Okay, when I try to explain certain things to him or I try to talk to him about music, he says, I don't listen to lyrics and songs. I mean, I think that the difference is Taylor Swift is Taylor Swift, right? She is... I am a pop apologist podcaster, okay? It's not, that part of me is not so important anymore, but Taylor Swift is like one of the great artists of our time. And if her interlocutor, the person who she is charged with looking across a table and speaking to for the rest of her life, doesn't have the depth to really contend with her ideas, there's going to be problems there.
Well, that's what you get
girlfriends for. I think
for.
She gets a lot of that. Yeah, Jack Antonoff in the studio.
Listen, we all make certain concessions in life, but I do think it's harder for billionaires and people who have like everything at their feet to honestly, I think, make those compromises.
But Lauren, I think it's yes, it's hard to get everything you want out of a spouse, and I think yes, she needs like intellectual and artistic partner to create with. I feel like she can find that in a lot of people, but here's what's actually really rare for her to find is someone to withstand the glare of public attention, someone to withstand her little oddities and being kind of trapped in a 16-year-old's mind sometimes and just being really dorky and extra. And that's exactly him. Like,
yeah.
I think they're the same kind of nuts.
Well, also I will say, I think that he might have the ability to be playful and to be I don't want to say casual, but just like happy. He might have the ability,
yeah,
honestly, to be happy that she doesn't have access to. And
yeah,
that actually is kind of like, that actually is my husband in a certain way. Like, yeah, he doesn't listen to lyrics of songs, but he has a certain access to other things that he teaches me about. And so I think there might be something analogous there. Mm-hmm. I just need to, maybe I can do a double date and we can, you know, do the Venn diagram, figure it out.
Try to figure it out. I want to call out one thing before we leave So High School. Did she clear the line with him? You know how to ball. I love Aristotle. Because I do think that would definitely call his contract with Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader into question, because she's basically just calling him dumb in that line. That line is just like, you don't actually know shit about what's in textbooks. And that really worried me. Like, he just, like you said, Joe, just signed a contract for 22 episodes. And I don't know, if I were the producers, I would be kind of worried.
Okay, well, Chan, first of all, I think like his Twitter feed shows he probably doesn't really know Aristotle.
He's kind of just
squirrely.
Like, yeah, squirrely. Yeah, yeah. Amazing. But, you know, I think with spouses and with dating, like everyone is going to be spewing something. You're going to get caught in whatever like cloud, like whatever's raining from their cloud. With Joe Allen, it seemed like a lot of sadness, bless his heart. With Maddie Healy, it seemed like some drugs and nefarious stuff. With Travis Kelce, like I think the only thing spitting from his cloud is the spit coming from his little speeches at, you know, a victory speech. And honey, like I'll get drenched in that all day, any day.
No, I think I... Honestly, I am with you, ready to get soaked. I think Travis Kelce is delicious. I think that he's super fun. I think that he is hot as fuck. I am excited for her because I think that sometimes like maybe the person or what you think is going to be best for you, like a Maddie Healy who can understand all your tortured poetry, mm-hmm. that's actually a miserable person to live
right.
with. That's a person who's so chaotic, who brings out the worst parts of you. She might need someone who brings out her lightness and her, you know, her so high school. Like that's going to be a more fun place for her to live than to live in the tortured poets department with Maddie Healy and his typewriter.
Totally. No, and
as much as you guys
love
that
bomb. Do
you think
they'll get married?
Ooh.
I do.
Lauren, do you think they'll get married and never get divorced?
My only fear with Travis is that he's kind of like us with Kate Middleton, where it's like every day she wasn't found, you know, was like another huge day for the podcast. I almost feel like every day that he continues to keep dating Taylor, it's like a huge day for his career. And he knows that the second it's over, it's like he's going to be in a different place. And I don't want to seem jaded, but there's a part of me that's just is fearful that he could be using her. I don't want to believe that, but it's just something that I fear. And so I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine them getting married and never divorced, if I'm being completely honest. What do you think?
Yeah, it's got to be hard for him to separate how much like I love this person, but also like what it's doing for my career and success.
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be a hard thing to, how do you actually separate that?
Lauren, the wall behind you, it's quite barren. What's going on there?
You know what? I find getting things framed to be very stressful. And so I've just never done it. I don't basically have anything framed in my home. And it's sad for me.
It's very sad, which is why we are so lucky to be sponsored by Framebridge right now.
Yes, I am so excited to correct this wrong in my life. What's so great about Framebridge is for other people also intimidated by a gallery wall, if you go on their website, you can just very quickly, easily upload like 5 photos or whatever it is, and they will send you different dimensioned, cute frames, beautiful, sleek, modern, so you can just hang your gallery wall and it's good to go.
They make it very easy on a layperson like yourself. Everyone, see why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's framebridge.com.
Also, isn't it interesting? She wrote in Lavender Haze about how she just wanted to stay in the Lavender Haze. Everyone wanted this 1950s shit from her. And this album is like fixated on getting married.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just found that to be very interesting, given like how much actually getting married plays such a big role in her head.
See, I actually think that in her earlier albums, I feel like she's always been not... You know, I'm not saying this in a judgmental way, but I think she's always been fixated and excited about the prospect of getting married, having kids. You know, if you look at like Paper Rings and all of that stuff, I think that Lavender Haze was actually a moment of like delusion where it was just like, I don't even actually care about all that stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to like get back to the, you know, when our love was just like fresh and new. And I think, and yeah, especially with like peace, she talks about like children and everything. And so I think this is just a return to really who she is. And, you know, she does want all those things.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of gut-wrenching for me how many times she mentions children, getting married, rings, all of those things in this album, because clearly she's ready for that.
You should talk to me under the table, talking rings and talking cradles. I wish I could unrecall how we almost had it all.
And I don't know how much like the rings and marriage is more of like a narrative device of, it's just easier to say that in a song to express that, hey, I want your everything and I want to be everything to you. And I want to just like be together until the end. But yeah, it does seem like Joe Allen couldn't give her that. And I'm curious what you think about their breakup.
I feel like we're kind of getting into the gossip, and I feel like we need to return to the music here. And I would love to do that and explore that question through Love of My Life, because I feel like the question of why they broke up. And if we read this track, a lot of people are really split on who this is about. But anyway, I do think it's one of the God tier tracks on this album with But Daddy 100%. I Love Him. Those are my top two for sure. And my question is this a song about Joe or is this a song broken up about Maddie?
I think it's about both.
Joe, no question for me.
Joe, no question.
I think it's about both. I think the loss of her life is Joe, but I do think Maddie has references in here. There are references to Maddie. So I think she kind of pulls in some moments from Maddie, but I think this song is mostly about Joe, but I think there are some like parts of it that feel so Maddie. It's hard to like ignore completely. And for what it's worth, I don't want to live in a world where this song is fully about Maddie. So I'm trying to just like, you know, straddle the line.
The reasons I think they're about Joe is like Mr. Steal Your Girl, because I think he stole Taylor from, was it Tom Hiddleston, I want to say?
Or Calvin Harris. At the time. I don't know.
And then when she says, you cinephile, just because like he's famous, they're famously really into movies. And I think he, quote unquote, taught her a lot about films. But my favorite lyric in this song is Our Field of Dreams Engulfed in Fire. Obviously an ode to the 92 Kevin Costner classic, but it's also just like a wrenching metaphor.
Our field of dreams engulfed in fire, your arsons match your somber eyes, and I'll still see it until I die. You're the loss of my life.
Yeah, I mean, the lyric, oh, what a valiant roar, what a bland goodbye, that also points to Joe, because I do think that the goodbye with Maddie Healy wasn't bland. It was like quite cruel to just ghost someone you had been, you know, leading on very intensely. And I think that with Joe, it's kind of like the black dog. She says, you even forgot to stop sharing your location with me. It's like this relationship just fully petered out in the most bland way. Like they just gave it everything they could, and then it just couldn't work. And so anyway, I am being brought around to this being about Joe, which I really, really hope for. And for me, if it's about Joe, and this is where we get into the weird parasocial nature of my relationship to Taylor and these songs. Anyway, if it's about Joe, for me, this is just like a God tier masterful song, because it really expresses the sorrow of a good enough relationship, but not a great relationship, not the love of your life, truly. What ends up being the loss.
So I just want to say quickly, for my point about maybe it having a, you know, a strand of Maddie in it, is when she says, so in verse two, when she says, when your impressionist paintings of heaven turned out to be fakes and you took me to hell too. I think she's talking about Joe. And then she says, and all at once the ink bleeds, a con man sells a fool a get love quick scheme. But I felt a hole like this never before and ever since. I think that could be literally her just referencing post Joe Maddie. Because I don't think it was I think Maddie was literally love bomby get love quick scheme con man.
And all at once the ink bleeds, a con man sells a fool a get love quick scheme. But I felt a hole like this never before and ever since.
Anyway, Just had to put that.
And it might have happened like where that song "Guilty as Sin," like it sounds like she's still in the relationship with Joe.
Yes,
but like she's maybe slowly getting bombed by Maddie Healy too.
Right.
Also a lyric that struck me in LOML is "You shit talked me under the table."
That's Joe. That's fucking Joe.
Yeah, I'm just like, what did that look like? And that's awful.
What is, she has another line. I'm forgetting what it exactly is, but it's something about an esoteric joke or something. And I just think that's also Joe. It's just like, you know, secretly he would make fun of her or he belittle her and, you know, she just could feel his like disapproval or not, you know, resentment. Not being good enough and resentment. Yeah.
Like you're not a serious person.
I mean, it's just so, I really have the chills looking at these lyrics, because for me, this song just goes to show like this is such a serious artist and this is such a genius. Taylor Swift. Like Taylor Swift is a master at her craft. And this song is, I think, her at the height of her powers. It's heartbreaking.
I have another lyric I want to point out that's just like, incredible. And your suit and tie in The Nick of Time. I mean, that's just full Reputation era, you know, like The Nick of Time, just when I needed, you know, somebody to actually like me and for who I was. You low down boy, you stand up guy, you know, him being obviously super private.
And you suit and tie in The Nick of Time. You low down boy, you stand up guy, you Holy Ghost. You told me I'm the love of your life. You said I'm the love of your life.
Yeah.
And obviously, I don't think she would refer to Maddie as a stand up guy.
No,
right?
No, right. I agree.
Right.
Yeah. Also, like, it's just a classic Taylor Swift lyric of, I wish I could unrecall how we almost had it all. Or just like, you're talking about your expectations and how they just let you down.
Mm-hmm.
What's your classic line about men will do nothing but let you down or something like that?
Oh, men will fail you every time.
Quote from
that. That's something our father told us at a casual dinner one time. He just like,
no, at a birthday dinner. It was at a birthday dinner. It was our little sister's birthday dinner where we were all going around sharing advice for her future. And our dad said it was in the context of get a degree and get a job, because men will fail you every time.
He's so good. He's so wise.
I mean, he's never spoken truer words.
I mean, honestly, I hope Dad and Taylor never talk, because I don't know. She might kill herself after hearing the prophecy. Okay, where she wonders if any of this will ever turn around. The prophecy, also devastating. And I think this brings up, it's just so sad. I want to say this. Courtney, our dear sister, texted this, and she said that she feels like this album, it's so sad and it's so depressed, and it really shows what a bad place Taylor is in. And it feels like the way heartbreak hits in such a more devastating, horrific way, truly, in your 30s than in your 20s. In your 20s, who knows what could happen? It's still, you know, life is in front of you unfolding every second. Who knows who you can meet? But in your 30s, I think that you start to see, instead of it feeling like the beginning of your story, you start to see like the book being written, and it starts, and it, I think it can feel like your story, you know, you stop having control of it. I think it can be hard to keep hope on some level. And I don't want people to feel that way, but I think that is a reality. And I think that's really captured in the prophecy.
I've been on my knees, change the prophecy. Don't want money, just someone who wants my company. Let it once be me. Who do I have to speak to about if they can redo the prophecy?
I was just going to say, literally took the words out of my mouth. I completely agree. I think you start to see the repeated themes over and over again. And I think the prophecy is her like grappling with that and just like, can this not be true? Can this somehow work out for me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I'm going to need to revisit this one. The production on it just like was so sleepy to me. I think I skipped it after one listen.
Well,
sorry.
Can I just say though,
it's all right.
That
it's all right, Joe.
I think that Joe, I think that you're validating some of the criticism of this album, which is that a lot of the production sounds very similar, and a lot of it can kind of blend. One song can blend into the next, and this can almost feel more like spoken poetry and less like songs.
Yeah.
Like a lot of these songs for me, they don't lead with the melodies or the music or the crazy bridges.
Mm-hmm.
It's more just like super depressed ramblings at time. And I think that almost speaks to the listlessness of depression, possibly, and speaks to truly the dark mental state she has been in.
Oh, so it's really sad. And I also will agree with you, Joe, that it took me like my third listen of the whole album before I like read the lyrics of the prophecy. And I was like starting to think like, okay, this makes more sense. I understand what it's about. Now I can like grab onto it a little bit more. It was not something that instantly hooked me or caught me. So
I'll put in the work.
Thank you.
I would think we should talk about kind of speaking to this. I would love to go to I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. I really want to get your opinions on this song.
Let's do it.
I can do it with a broken heart. I'm so depressed, I act like it's my birthday every day. I'm so obsessed with him, but he avoids me like a plague. I am so productive. It's an art.
I took that one out for a spin on a run yesterday, and it's a bop. I don't think it reaches the heights it could. Like, it should, I think, be like a masterful pop song, like Blank Space or Wildest Dreams. But don't get me wrong, I love listening to it. And honestly, I relate to it with, like, in a work setting. Like, sure, I can fake it till I make it. I love the lyrics of, I'm a real tough kid. I can handle my shit. Smile, bitch. Like, yeah, like, I can do that. It makes me want to push past what I'm capable of. But also, I don't know, it doesn't quite totally reach the heights I think it could.
No, and I think that I completely agree with you. And I think that it's like a lot of songs on this album. Like, to me, it's like Down Bad, where it's fun to listen to with the lens of like, oh, this sing-songy, overly formulaic, almost like synthetic sounding chorus is supposed to sound fake and hollow because she's, you know, she's just
baking it,
phoning it in. She's working through it.
I like that.
So, but I think that on first listen, especially, you're like, what the fuck is this? And
yeah, clinkety clank.
Yeah, like it was a cloud I had to get through to appreciate this album for sure. And anyway, I do wish it had reached the heights of A Cruel Summer, of A Wildest Dream, of a crazy good pop song that you really, you want to jam to. And I think this is a song that will come on and you probably won't turn off. I don't know it's a song that you'll reach for.
Yeah.
It's giving kids bops, but I love the lyrics and I like the message, but
I like the message. So funny. It's like a movie your parents saw that they like didn't fully love, but we like the message.
Well, my mom, she didn't like a movie that we were watching with her. She'd say, I really liked spending time with you. That's what she said after we watched Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married Too?
Oh my gosh, so funny. Okay, I have one thing I want to say about I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. What I did appreciate about this song, while it's not something, it's not necessarily a song I'm going to reach for, is I liked that it sort of answered a lot of questions we were all having. You know, while the Eras Tour was going on and so much shit was happening in the background of her personal life, her and Joe were breaking up and she was just getting out there and performing. And I think it just sort of validated that all of us, what all of us were worried about and thinking about, was just like, how is she continuing to do these 3-hour shows night after night when all of this stuff is blowing up behind her? And I, so I guess I kind of liked her being like, yeah, I was, and I'm really good at this. And it was a little cocky, and I was into it for those reasons.
Have you seen that clip of her Florida show where after she plays Lover, they hand her a guitar and the lights are kind of dimmed. They're like, especially like a quick resetting and she's wiping tears from her eyes. Ugh. And it just like matches the vibe of the song.
For
like,
real.
Okay, let's go.
I need
to
watch
it. I'll send it to you on Twitter.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, I need to see that. I do also love the ending lyric of try to come for my job. That was amazing.
It was so funny.
I absolutely love it. The one thing that I do feel though is I think that there's just a part of me that's like, people spend thousands of dollars. This is like their one annual experience that they're putting so much money to go see, to experience. They work so hard for it. And there's just a part of me that's like, I don't know that this is the right moment to be letting people in on kind of faking it for them. Like, I get that she's such a great artist. She, you know, performs in the rain. She is incredible that way. But there's just a part of me that's like, it almost seems a little insensitive to the fan base to be like, oh yeah, and
I disagree. I don't think the fans would be upset about knowing that she was going through it. I think the fans love Taylor Swift for the messy storm that she is. You know, they don't love her necessarily. Like, and she, I don't think anyone was let down by her performance. I don't think anyone's like now looking back and being like, wow, I really wasted that money because she wasn't having a good time out there. Like, she could have also been having a good time, but also breaking down inside. And that's like, that's the Taylor we know and love.
People are disputing their American Express car charges.
Joe knows all about
that Florida show.
I think it makes you appreciate her more and her shows more, because as we've been reminded by Kim Kardashian, nobody wants to work anymore. And I'm serious. You see that. So many tours are canceled. Like, so many of these artists, I won't name them on J-Lo. Here, are like, they're scaling back tours or they cancel them because I'm exhausted or I can't go perform. Like, great. I respect mental health, but like, don't sign up with Live Nation to create, you know, a 52-date tour. Like, this woman follows her commitments.
Yeah. So. No, it's true. It's true. I want to get to the Kim Kardashian of it all. But before we do that, can we talk about the opening track, Fortnite? Because I do feel like I want to speak to this, and I want to talk about Florida. I want to for sure cover like these big moments in the music before we get to more of kind of the gossip. But I am curious, how did you guys feel about Fortnite when you first listened?
I was supposed to be sent away, but they forgot to come and get me. I was a functioning alcoholic till nobody noticed my new aesthetic.
I think it's so sleek. I really like the song and I keep going back to it. I have no idea what it's about. I assume it's fiction. I don't even know what Fortnite means. Can you guys explain?
2 weeks, right?
Is it two weeks? Oh, really?
Yeah, it means 2 weeks. And it's kind of like, you know, Downton Abbey speak for 2 weeks. It's just an arcade
to do
term.
That.
That's crazy because they don't use night plural in that word. So Fortnite sounds like if someone was like, can I come stay at your house for a fortnight? I'd be like, sure, that's like 1 to 2 nights. I would not think 2 weeks.
No, it's
watch
it's
out,
weeks.
Joe. Watch out. Someone might try to help you.
Wow.
I think it's a solid opener track. I'm not necessarily hitting it on repeat, but I it's a solid opener track. I like Post Malone in it. Yeah.
It's a vibe.
I was a functioning alcoholic till nobody noticed my new aesthetic. Like, of course I thought this was AI. Has Taylor ever written lyrics that bizarre? Like, has she ever had a song that honestly, narratively, it lacks so much cohesion? You're really lost when you're listening to it.
Do you know what that means? Does anybody know what that really means?
Well, how about the lyric, thought of calling you, but you won't pick up. Another fortnight lost in America. Move to Florida. Buy the car you want. What?
Okay, this makes me feel better that I was so confused. Yeah. I've famously been an advocate that Taylor Swift should be defunded as a director of music videos. Like, I find her music videos cringe, but she knocked this one out of the park.
Right? I agree. I love the music. And I agree with you. Like, her visual directing and style can be something I contend with. But this music video was so fun. If looks could kill, I was murdered watching it. She just was clearly, I don't know, the way she embodied just someone who was driven fully insane. It was so visually cool and fun to watch. I will 100% be rewatching.
I'm with you. She looks amazing in it too.
She looks incredible. I also feel like Fortnite really is a perfect opening track because it's like, let's all enter together this vertiginous landscape of Taylor Swift in this new musical landscape. Because I feel like with Fortnite, you don't get anything you think you're going to get with Taylor.
Yeah.
And it's almost like on this album, expect the unexpected. Who knows what's going to come next? This is going to be a weird kaleidoscope. You might get dizzy. You don't even know where you are, but just enter the tortured pose department.
And I think that's a perfect segue for us to talk about what truly was unexpected in Florida, 3 exclamation points.
You can beat the heat if you beat the charges too. They said I was a cheat. I guess it must be true. And my friends all smell like weed or a little bit.
A song I will hide on my Spotify.
Well, hide. I'm going to hide it as well, Joe. I will never probably listen to this from start to finish. I mean, I loved Florence and the Machine, but this song makes me like hate her voice. I feel bad saying that. I don't like it. I actively don't like the sound of this song.
Well, I didn't like this song at all either until I learned what's behind it. Okay. Do you guys?
Is it about Scooter? I don't know.
It's not about Scooter. She did like iHeartRadio. She introed a few of the songs. But so she says that this song is about, she watches Dateline constantly. She literally says, I watch Dateline all the time. And it seems like everyone who's on the run tries to escape to Florida. So that's what this song's about.
I'm Lester Holt, and this is Dateline.
I'm always watching.
watching like Dateline, people, you know, have these crimes that they commit. Where do they immediately skip town and go to? That they go to Florida. You know, they like try to reinvent themselves, have a new identity, blend in.
Like it's literally, it's about.
Oh, it was like a creative prompt.
It's a creative prompt about just like skipping town to Florida and just getting fucked up in Florida because you're so down on your luck, which I find to actually be delightful
but
as a project.
Do you sonically like it?
I actually really like this song. I feel like it's such a bop. It's so fun to listen to. It's super enjoyable for me.
Enjoyable?
The New York Times and my sister said it was one of their favorite tracks on the album.
Wow. Yeah, it's just, it's a fun groove. Florida. I do feel like it's a little rude on people who own timeshares and anyone who enjoys living in Destin, Florida. I mean, you
We're
work your
at you, Jamie Lynn Spears.
You work your life away just to pay for a timeshare down in Destin. It's just a little pejorative to the good citizens of that town.
She won't be touring there anytime soon.
Little did you know your home's really only a town you're just a guest in. So you work your life away just to pay for a timeshare down in Destin, Florida.
I don't know. As I've mentioned online, I have a strict I will not date you if you spend a significant amount of time in Florida. And significant to me is more than 3 weeks. So.
More than a fortnight.
Isn't there a part of you guys that just wants to know what it's like to like commit a heinous crime and like be in a fugue state under like the burning sun of Florida doing drugs? I just
absolutely
feel like
not.
Mentally, no. I want to go through that experience.
Florida.
I hate it.
I
love it. I love it.
I don't like it. It's like I can't skip it fast enough.
It's just a fun alternative reality to think about being strung out in Florida. I don't know.
I just the other thing that sort of bothers me is like, okay, you have this session with Florence Welch. You have this time to like bang something out, and like this is what we get. This is just like this is where I go back to. Yeah, this album really did need an editor.
Well, the difference between you and me, Chandler, is I'm at the acceptance stage of this album. I had full anger. I had denial with the AI. I was very upset for a full day, but now I've accepted and I'm enjoying these songs on their own terms. Okay. But I agree with you. I do think that it is criminal, and maybe Taylor should, you know, be forced to go to Florida for a while, because you're right. Like with Florence Welch at the helm, they could have created some pure magic, like another Cruel Summer, another bop that just shakes you to your core. Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we got. Mm-hmm. No.
That's not what we got. Mm-mm.
I want to bring up really quick.
Yeah.
Thank you, Amy. So I know we touched on the Kim song, because this is another one where I don't actually understand it very well. Like I get that it's a diss song about Kim, but I gave this one a 0.
That time you were throwing punches, I was building something, and I couldn't wait to show you it was real. Scream fuck you, Amy, to the night sky as the blood was gushing, but I can't forget the way you made me
feel. It feels like Mean from Taylor's first record, but like, it like lacks the like winkiness of it. I think it's... there's one thing about Taylor Swift is that the culture will move on, but she won't when it comes to like a grudge or hating someone. But I also get where she's coming from, because here's what's happened with Kim Kardashian is Skims has taken off, and now people in Taylor's inner circle, Brittany Mahomes, Lana Del Rey, are modeling for her, and Kim is going to be, you know, a television star on Hulu. So I think Taylor wants to be like, hey, you may all think she's this evolved person anymore, but to me, she will always be this bitch.
Right.
So I read some interesting theories, and I'm with you completely. Taylor doesn't let down. Taylor holds a grudge. Okay, she gets stuck in the past completely. Interestingly,
she buries hatchets, but she keeps maps of where they're buried.
Oh yeah, and they're buried shallow to the earth, you know, so she can quickly retrieve them. But I think that with Thank You, Amy, and this song, I read an interesting theory that they say that basically there's no way this song's actually about Kim. Given that she says, like, I scrambled the clues, no one will really know who this is about. Mm. And I just almost feel like Taylor is too smart to say that and not scramble the clues at all to make it so obvious. Like, it's one thing if there weren't the capital letters and it's just thank you, Amy, and you have to put together that there's Kim in there.
Yeah.
But to spell it out for people and then to say I've scrambled the clues, someone's like, this is about a high school bully. It's about a high school bully, some bitch, you know, who lives in Pennsylvania or Nashville or wherever and has kids who come home seeing Taylor Swift and has serious beef with Taylor. And that to me was like a moment of vindication where it's like, maybe there is something there.
Okay.
Any thoughts?
Is this copium? Let go. This is about Kim with the spray tanned bronze statue. But I mean, I like that idea and going there was fun. But I love that she invoked Kim Kardashian's child in the song.
Yeah. Wild. Someone was like, of course, she's bringing children into this discussion. Innocent children who had nothing to do with this fight.
I do always wonder if people in the Kardashian circle have to hide being a Swiftie or if they just fully, you know, blinders up, never listen.
I mean, I think Kim Kardashian has had a video of her working out to Taylor Swift songs. Like,
she's just apathetic. Kim Kardashian,
Lauren's
I think, actually, in comparison to Taylor present day, seems so mature and like she's moved on. She does not engage with this at all.
Well, here's the thing is Kim Kardashian was the murderer, so of course she's moved on. Taylor Swift was the victim, and Kim was on Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen, and Andy Cohen's like, so what's the situation with you and Taylor? And she's like, yeah, we're good. And I'm sure Taylor saw that and was like, bitch, no, we're not.
Thank you, Amy, was written the next day.
Okay, for sure. But I guess, in my opinion, Kim comes across as more mature right now. And like, she's not, and like, she's excluding herself from the narrative. Yes, she was the murderer, but she's not throwing shade on Taylor. She's not responding. She's just, you know, taking another selfie in nude underwear in her big bathroom.
I'll concede that Taylor does not sound mature in this song, for sure. And I think Kim's like, you're sad that I murdered and tried to ruin your little life? That was so long ago. Like, get over it.
Also, can we just discuss the scene? Imagine the scene where Taylor goes to Aaron Dessner and is like, I want to write a song about this fucking drama with Kim Kardashian. Like, what is...
Aaron Dessner just puts his head in his hands.
Like, Aaron Dessner's like, sure, let me take off my Skims first.
Like, I don't know. It's so funny. I just wish Bon Iver also had been on this track, too, to just make it even more absurd.
That's wild. That's when Aaron Dessner is just like, you know what? It's a check. A job is a job. And you show up every day and you just get the check. While we're on the subject of Aaron Dessner and the Dessner family, we were talking about this briefly before we recorded in our group chat.
Wait, we can't move on yet. I have to stay on this song really quick.
Okay.
Before we move on, I know where you're going. Before we move on, I just think it's important as people talking about this album to discuss really quickly and imagine, first of all, Taylor screaming at the sky, fuck you, Amy. Okay. And also Andrea Swift stomping around whatever home that they're at for that week and wishing Kim was dead.
She did.
I can fully picture the ladder.
I can see it.
I've seen her in, I think it was like the Miss Americana documentary where she's like, they're upset that someone forgot a flash drive at home. And Taylor's like, oh no, that was my fault. And Andrew's like, honey, you can't do everything. It was her fault. Like, she would let someone have it.
She'd set her dogs off on him.
Yes, for Dalmatian.
So it's just, I'm sorry. It's absolutely hilarious.
But let us also not forget, it's not the first time someone has invoked the name Amy to actually mean something else. Remember Britney Spears as F-U-C-K me?
Yes.
F-U-C-K me.
I thought that was clever.
Okay, Chandler, sorry. You may proceed with your original plan.
Thank you.
To take us away from this song.
With the song Robin, it's hitting for some people in our circles. It is continuing to not hit for me. And when I did some more research on it, trying to understand how it could hit for me, I saw that it was potentially written about Aaron Dessner's daughter named Robin. Don't mean to bring an innocent child into this, but like, I just don't need a song about Aaron Dessner's kids. Like, I can barely handle Blake Lively's kids being involved in some of like Taylor's works. I just, this is why this album needed an editor. I'm good. I didn't need the song about Aaron Dessner's daughter.
I think that she went to a baby shower for Robin and she was like, I wrote a song for your child, right? And she played the song about the dinosaurs, and it's very lovely. And then in that moment, she used that kind of emotional leverage to say, I would love for your collaboration on a song about Kim Kardashian. And he couldn't say no.
He couldn't say no.
Say no.
Literally. Joe, does this song hit for
you? Does. I really? Didn't think I needed a song about Aaron Dessner's child, but actually do. I find it beautiful. To be fair, I thought Robin was a boy. I don't know, but I it just like reminded me of my own innocence. I was on a walk this morning. I was like, oh, I was just basking in it. Mm. But also to be fair, when I first listened to this song, I just assumed it was going to be about Joe Alwyn. And I was like, oh, he must've had a favorite spot on the swing set. Oh, and then it kind of got more strange. Like, oh, he had dragonflies on. I was like, okay, wait, this probably can't be that. I love it. Yeah.
Joe loved Dinosaurs. I mean, you loved it so much. Did it go on your version of the album? Is it on your shortlist?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. It's on my shortlist. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I just thought it was a lovely song. You know what song barely made it on my version of the album?
What?
Is The Alchemy.
So when I touched down, call the amateurs and cut them from the tea. Ditch the clowns, get the crown, baby. I'm the one to be.
Yes.
I can't believe it made it on.
I think it's an offensive song because presumably it's about Travis Kelce. But I'm sorry. It is so generically about sports. It might as well be about Rob Gronkowski. Like, get out of here.
And you love the Chiefs. Like, you as a football fan.
I love the Chiefs.
It doesn't hit for you.
But there's no Chiefs. There's nothing that captures the spirit of Kansas City or my boys in this song. I'm sorry.
No. See, I'm going to say I don't want a Taylor Swift song that talks about warming the benches. I don't know. I don't want straight football analogies.
Do
I have a target on my back?
The So Fun in High School is the most football I want in any of her songs.
So Long in High School?
Or make it like more specific. Talk to me about Andy Reid and talk to me about, you know, Pacheco running down the field. Like, you write such specific lines.
Yeah, right.
Like, give it to me like you know the Chiefs kingdom like I do. Like, you should. You've been in it, bitch.
Right.
So really, we don't want songs. We don't just want songs about football. We want songs about really specific plays. Like almost.
I don't care about touchdown as a concept. I care about my boys and what they did last season because I watched every game. She allegedly did, but maybe she's too drunk to remember.
You've been robbed of what could have been.
Fans,
I'm waiting for the next album.
Well, I'm glad we're at least together on not enjoying this song.
I just think what I was saying is I think that the you know ball, I know Aristotle, like that's the length to which I want the football, you know, sprinkled in the songs. That's as much as I'll take.
I think that's fair.
I know we're getting close to the end of our recording session. So there's two songs that I want to touch on, but maybe we only have time for one. What do you guys think? I definitely want to touch on The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. I think it's important.
Yes. I think we need
so maybe to. Let's just finish there. And Chandler, you and I can contend with So Long London on our bonus episode this week for subscribers and Patreonies.
Okay. Great.
You guys, take it away. The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived.
And I don't miss what we had, but could someone give a message to the smallest man who ever lived?
I think that this is one of the best tracks on this record. Joe,
it didn't make my Joe's version of this album. It's not a bop, and it's
that bridge.
Yes.
You don't want to feel that bridge reverberating through your body one more time.
Oh no, I'm remembering now. Yeah, I didn't like how all of a sudden the song turned
changed
sonically and was like, "Yeah, did you want me dead?" Like it just didn't do
I loved
it for me.
It.
But I'm yeah. I do like the line in 50 years will all this be declassified, but. Yeah, go off, girls.
I loved it. This one is a 10 out of 10 for me. I think that, especially going into this album, thinking this song was going to be about Joe, and then knowing it's just a full Maddie diss track where she talks about how he asked a friend of her friend for drugs and that person ghosted him. I mean, it is scathing. And I love the way the music transitions. To me, it's like a song you want to scream sing. Mm-hmm. I loved this one. And I think that I don't know how Maddie Healy's current girlfriend can listen to this in good conscience.
A message to the smallest man who ever lived. Were you sent by someone who wanted me dead? Did you sleep with a gun underneath our bed? Were you writing a book? Were you a sleeper cell spy? In 50 years, we'll all But you're still performing, and in plain sight you hid. But you are what you did, and I'll forget you, but I'll never forgive the smallest man who ever lived.
It's so funny. It really goes to show Love of My Life is not about Matty Healy, because this is not a bland goodbye. This is for her. I mean, she thinks he should belong in prison, which if we could imprison exes for their wrongdoings against us, that is a political platform. I could finally reengage with politics. Okay.
Absolutely.
If Joe or Don could get that on their platform, because I'm with Taylor. Like, I think, I don't know. I love being transported to that feeling of being so utterly done wrong. It's just so cathartic. It's like, were you going to kill me?
When she says, you said normal girls were boring, but you were gone by the morning. It's just like, fuck this guy.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics are so juicy.
I do think that it takes too long to get to the bridge. The music is a little one note and kind of boring until we get to the bridge. And I think this song could approach God tier status if it was sonically more interesting and more captivating from the beginning.
Thank you. It does have like incredibly juicy lyrics, but yeah, it's flat for me. But I love the in your Jehovah's Witness suit. Like, yes. I'm sorry. I don't think Taylor Swift has ever answered the door to Jehovah's Witnesses. They're not getting past her security.
Do we want to just really briefly, given that this is the Torch Matty Healy on Fire song, discuss or ground ourselves in the words of Aunt Debbie?
Please.
So obviously this album lights Matty Healy on fire. And so his aunt has given an interview with the Daily Mail. Okay.
No.
Did you
guess? Oh my gosh. No. Oh my gosh. Maddie? Also, I love it. I want an Aunt Debbie.
So Matty Healy's aunt implies Taylor Swift's The Tortured Poets Department tracks don't tell the full story about the romance. We know, quote, more about what went on. One of Matty Healy's relatives has come to his defense, as fans speculated that several of Taylor Swift's songs from a brand new album referenced their brief romance, including a song titled The Smallest Man. His Aunt Debbie argued that there's much more to the picture than what Swift shared. Nothing surprises him anymore, she told the Daily Mail. He will not be surprised by this song. Him and her know what went on.
Oh my gosh. How much do you think she was paid for that quote?
I'm sorry. That is just the thing I love about that is, like, you just know in the way that Meghan Markle was like, I'm never speaking to my father again for talking to the tabloids. Matt and Hugh was like, thanks, Aunt Debbie. That was sick.
Yeah, you're a real one.
Exactly.
Only they
I'm
know
sure
what
Taylor
went on.
Deleted her number from her phone. Oh, wait, she didn't. I was never there.
We know what went on. It's just the best part about it, too, is it's almost like so apathetic. Like, come on, girl. We know what happened.
Yeah. We all know. Oh my gosh.
Anyway, there's truly so much to get into with this album. I really feel like we've scratched the surface. I want to thank you both for being here today with us. Chandler, we are going to soldier on and do a part two this week for people.
Someone has to talk about Cassandra.
Oh, someone's got to get into So Long London. All right. And to finish off, let's just rapid fire 1 to 10. Where do we rate this album?
7 for me.
Okay.
This one is a 7.75 for me.
Wow. Okay. And can I please hear what is a 10 for you from Taylor?
A 10 is like Folklore 1989. But what I'll say is, like, this is in the bottom 3 of Taylor's albums for me.
Wow.
But it's not the bottom 2. I actually don't think I could live with it. I don't want to live in a world without this album because of the title track.
Yes.
But I could live in a world without Speak Now and without self-titled.
Wait, you could live in a world without Long Live and Last Kiss?
Should we even publish this episode? I think Joe is...
I would, and in fact, I have for about 10 years of my life.
Okay, well, I'm not sure if you'll be back to talk about Taylor after that revelation. Well,
Lauren, you just secured another year as my co-host.
Yeah, seriously. That was so earth-shattering. Okay, I'm gonna try to soldier on like Taylor at the Eras Tour
in February.
Before I get
kicked off, my Strava username is quick plug for me.
Wait, Chandler. Okay, so what is a 10 for you?
I think 1989 is a 10 for me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. This album is a 6.5 for me. It's a 6.5. Okay. A 10 for me is Midnights. A 10 for me is Snow on the Beach specifically.
It's like such a
actually, Midnights is below this album for me.
What? You know, a lot of people don't like Midnights, and that's where I just know that I'm just alone in my genius sometimes.
I want to, one last thing. Midnights to me is such a 10 because there's so many dance bops in it.
Yes.
There's so many dance bops. And this album doesn't really have any dance bops in it. Maybe besides, you know, So High School.
I Can Do It With a Broken Heart.
Do It With a Broken Heart, which, like we said, you know, I'm not going to be reaching for it.
I agree that Midnights has some dance bops. Like, I, as much as anyone, like, will listen to Bejeweled as I'm getting ready to go pick up my DoorDash from outside. But, like, 1989 has just better dance bops.
Sure.
You know, so yeah. I just don't need it.
Yeah.
Well, I need it for sure.
Definitely
need it. And 1989 Vault Tracks is a 10 out of 10 for me. Anyway, you guys, thank you so much for listening. We need to stop talking and force ourselves because we will talk about Taylor forever. Joe, where can people find you? I know they want more.
Yes. So I am a big runner athlete. You can find me Joe Peacock on Strava. It's a social network for athletes. You can find me at that Joe Peacock on my gated Instagram. And Joe Peacock on LinkedIn.
Perfect.
We love you, Joe.
We love you, Joe. We love you, Taylor. And we sit at your feet, okay? If I saw Taylor in person, I would throw my eyes up, okay? The light, I wouldn't be able to see through the light. I would kneel and kiss her garment still to this day after this album. I just want to make that very clear.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Bye. Okay.
Love you both. Thanks
love
for having
you.
Me.
Take a moment. Promise me this. That you'll stand by me forever. But if God forbid, fate should step in. And force us into a goodbye. If you have children someday. To the pictures, please tell them my name. Tell them how the crowds went wild. Tell them how I hope they shine. Long live the walls we crashed through. I had the time of my.
Now, folks, don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at Pop Apologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.